Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Pick and Pop podcast. As always, I'm your host, Luke Sicari, and joining me on the line for another massive chat about Aussie hoops is Damien Arsenis from thepickandroll.com.au. Damo, how are you?
Very good, and it's been another golden week, particularly for the Australian women who have again stamped their authority on the Asian competitions in the new age of basketball in the region.
It has been, and we'll touch on that very shortly, Damo, but we have to start. We started the show with him last week. We're going to do it again this week. I wouldn't be surprised if we do it for 22 weeks consecutively after this. Ben Simmons, I mean, look, all the numbers, all the historic numbers. I mean, the triple-double game, you know, his game against Dallas, which was absolutely sensational. 23 points on 10 of 15 shooting, 8 assists, 7 rebounds.
And 3 steals.
And 3 steals as well. So he's doing it on both ends of the floor. You know, only one of two players to have at least have 10, 5, and 5 in each of his first 6 games, him and Oscar Robertson. Ben Simmons and Oscar Robertson are in a lot of similar categories in the first 6 games. Basically, every stat in a historical sense that has Ben Simmons' name in it also has Oscar Robertson's, which just speaks absolute volumes of how good he's been right off the bat, Damo.
Oh, exactly right. And the exciting thing about it is Ben Simmons doesn't doesn't look like anything's going to stop him from breaking that record either. So Oscar Robertson's record, the big O's record, went 6 games. Yeah. Well, Ben Simmons has matched that already, and nothing looks like slowing him. In fact, if anything, he's looking better and better with each game. And I commented during the week, watching him play, you know, you quickly forget that he's a rookie. He's a rookie that's just played 6 games.
And coming off the back of a season and an ending injury. I mean, how many players do we see, you know, take their time coming back from injury? Granted, he was out for a long time, but, you know, takes them a while to get their flow back. I mean, this is a guy that he hadn't played a proper game of basketball. I mean, if you want to take into account like things like the summer league and preseason stuff like that, but if we're talking about real super competitive games of basketball, he hadn't played one since college. That's a long time ago, Damo. It's nearly off top of my head, what, 18 or so months ago. So that's it's a long, long time to be out of the game, and then to slot right back in on a team that, you know, they're 2-4 Philadelphia. They've been in most games. There's been a couple of blowouts here and there. But on a young team that has a losing culture, it's just to come in and look so comfortable, you know, against the world's best players and just absolutely slot right in without a jump shot yet. I mean, you're still seeing that. Once he develops that, he'll be a lot more dangerous with the ball in hand. But the way he's gliding through defenses, running up and down the floor, controlling the offense, it's a 7-foot point guard. I mean, let's cut to the chase on that. He's basically a 7-foot point guard, which is unbelievable in its own right.
Exactly.
Oh, and, it's unreal.
Throw that in that last game where he had 8 assists, he only had 1 turnover.
Yeah, correct.
One turnover. So, and if his teammates were hitting the open shots that he was setting him up for, he would have had more than 10 assists again.
Yeah, so he's doing... Like, we've seen it a lot with rookies where if they've got a lot of responsibility with the ball, a byproduct of that is often turnovers because he's just got so much. I mean, we see it with the best players. Look at someone like James Harden, you know, unbelievable offensive talent, but because he does control the ball so much, it's a natural reaction that you do turn the ball over on occasions. That Ben Simmons game against the Mavericks, you know, he had the ball for the majority of the game and it was just smart decisions. And you know what?
He was making some incredible passes.
It's unreal. It's unreal.
And some of the offensive plays himself, like you mentioned developing a jump shot. Well, we saw signs.
We did.
Getting some confidence in his
jump
shot. We
saw signs. There's still a way to go, but there's a base level there. You know, there's something to build off.
Exactly.
Which is positive.
Exactly right. And the exciting thing is, you know, we haven't yet seen the best of him. And right now, given how weak the East is, we could be talking about an all-star appearance in Ben Simmons' first season.
Which would just be unbelievable. And you're right. You say we haven't seen the best of him, Damo. It's been 6 games of his career. We've got potentially, hopefully, 10, 15 more years of this. I mean, to me, sometimes I've got to pinch myself again. When I'm watching him play, I'm like, man, is this his 6th game, really? I mean, is this really,
and he's an Aussie.
Yeah, exactly. With all of these numbers, it almost makes me feel like, oh, he's been in the league for a while, hasn't he? No, he hasn't. 6 games.
Oh, exactly.
We can talk about it. And just like I mentioned last week, the way he's captured the, I wouldn't say the imagine, I guess you could say he's captured the imagination in some sense of the general Australian sporting public. You know, in such a congested and saturated market, Ben Simmons has just, he's already a national name within his first six NBA games. Obviously, the basketball community knew about him long before, but in terms of the general population, they now know who Ben Simmons is. They think this is this amazing basketball player who's just doing unbelievable things on the world's biggest stage in his sport. Now, moving on, Damo, we could chat about Simmons for another 10, 15 minutes. I'm not going to do that because there was gold happening in Australian basketball this week. Of course, I'm talking about the 2017 FIBA Under-16 Asian Tournament. Damo, to Sapphires, gold again. They're winning a lot of gold lately, to Sapphires.
Well, they have. They've been doing an absolute phenomenal job under the guidance of Shannon Seaborn, who just doesn't seem to be able to do anything wrong in coaching some of Australia's finest junior talent, junior female talent. And again, this was a qualification event for the 2018 FIBA Under-17 World Cup. Of course, Australia is the defending champion. We went through the tournament undefeated, but in the final, they faced their sternest test. They had to come from behind to beat a really good Japanese team. And really, in this new FIBA Asia region that Australia's now become, certainly in the women's section, Australia and Japan are building a bit of a rivalry here. Of course, Japan beat Australia for the open women's final of the FIBA Asia Cup not long ago. So bit of a rivalry developing there. And of course, Shannon Seaborn guiding the women through safely. Yes, it was a one-point win, but really they thrashed everyone before them,
right?
And crushed everyone in getting there, including the likes of China. And the good thing is the New Zealand has also got through as well. So we're going to see Australia and New Zealand in next year's World Cup.
Absolutely. So maybe just for those who didn't see it before we move on, the final stages of that one-point win, you know, 61-60 against Japan. In the final stages, what happened there? What allowed Australia to get that victory?
Oh, we stormed home. It was all about the defense, basically. Yep. Japan held a 13-point lead in the first half. Australia, as they often do, just locked down, defense being one of our staples, and really locked down on the Japanese, who were just shooting really hot from anywhere in the field in the first half, and ground out the win. It was a great come-from-behind effort, and really it was built on defence, which is, as I said, it's become renowned that Australians are going to put their body on the line and do what's needed to get the win.
So let's move on to another form of an Australian national team, not in the traditional basketball sense, of course, the FIBA 3-on-3 Asian Cup. We'll start with the girls, who did get gold. You know, the females got gold. Isabella Bourne, Sarah McApion, Chantal Pereira, and Carly Smith. Now, I hope I got all those names out. I did butcher some in the warm-up, which I apologise for. But so, Damo, they got gold at the FIBA 3-on-3 Asia Cup. Of course, that full recap is on the pickandroll.com.au. But, you know, this is a new format to a lot of people. A lot of people are still unsure about this. So talk us through, what does the gold mean going forward for Australia? Who did they beat? Was it on the world stage? Was it on an Asian stage, of course? What does it mean?
Asian stage. And what it means is Australia is really stamping their authority across the Asian region. Of course, we've just joined for the traditional 5-on-5 comp, and that means the 3-on-3 side of things were there as well. And traditionally, Australia hasn't really invested any time and effort at this level of standard for 3-on-3 basketball. But this time we've sent some really talented players that are suited to the shorter form of the game from the second tier competitions, in essence. And they've gone over there as virtually ranked outsiders and gone on. And the women have gone through undefeated. And they had a couple of moments against Turkmenistan. And in the final, they were certainly pushed against Malaysia. But the class shone through, the skills shone through of the Australians to win that one. And it was Bourne that was named MVP of the tournament. A 16-year-old was named MVP of this tournament from Australia, which is a phenomenal effort. And in the men's side, the men had a lot more tougher. Yep. They fell short to New Zealand. They had to qualify just to get into the main draw, which they did. New Zealand ranked number one or two coming into the event. That they did Australia over it. And so they were up against it the rest of the way, but managed to fight through. And it was the host Mongolia that got over them in the semi-final in overtime, so in extra time.
Yeah.
So the host nation got over them. They went on to win the gold medal. Australia went on to win bronze. and it's a great achievement, particularly given Australia just hasn't invested any time and effort in this form of the game.
Well, I think that's the biggest, just to jump in quickly there, I think that's the biggest thing with this. When people do have a look at the names who are representing Australia on this stage, just for the men's, Lucas Barker, Darcy Harding, Andrew Steele, Owen Odigie, people might know, developmental player from Melbourne United in the past, but definitely Harding, Barker and Steele, a lot of people are going to look at it and say, in all honesty, who are these guys? You know, they're representing Australia, but no one really has any identification of who they are.
No, that's right. But having said that, none of the players from either side has really played 3-on-3 basketball before either.
Yeah.
They came in without any world ranking points because that's how the 3-on-3 system works. It's a bit different to the traditional 5-on-5. And none of these players, they've been selected purely based on potential. And the fact is we've gone in and won a gold and a bronze in our first ever crack at it. Speaks volumes for the talent we have in this country. Now, if we can harness that and channel that in the right way, with regular structured competitions, really, Australia has a chance to really own the whole Asia region, and not just with the Australian national team, but through the professional ranks as well.
No doubt. So we'll see how that goes moving forward. Now, before we finish, Damo, we do want to chat. I do want to touch on the NBL. I want to touch on a team that I want to get your. I'd love to get your thoughts on it, on the situation as well.
You're talking about United, aren't you?
Correct. Talking about Melbourne United. I was going to intro it a little bit, Damo, but of course
I'm stolen your thunder.
We'll just jump straight into it. Look, I am talking about Melbourne United. Now, this is a team entering the season, and rightfully so. You know, some people were calling them the best NBL roster ever constructed, the most talented starting five, which, I mean, look, on paper, which is always a dangerous thing to say on paper, but that's what a lot of preseason predictions are made of. On paper, if you look at the name, on a name-by-name basis, it was an unreal roster of talent. It was overflowing. It was deep. You know, it was filled in every position. You had Dean Vickerman coming, a seasoned NBL head coach with experience coming in. You thought this is all going to blend nicely for United. They're stumbling, Damo. You know, they really, really are stumbling. Of course, they had that doubleheader victory in Adelaide to start the season. That super game against OKC that we can just harp on forever. But eventually, I was speaking to someone about this at the NBL during the week, eventually you're going to have to move on. You know, it was a great victory. It was great for Australian basketball. Something you're going to hang your hat on for a long time. But the reality of the situation is they've lost their last three games to Perth, New Zealand, and Brisbane. As great as that was in Oklahoma City, you've got to move on. And look, they're struggling. And to me, it comes down to Casper Wira and Chris Golding. So these are two guys that, these are the stars. You know, Casey Prather's coming and being some. He was magnificent against Brisbane. He had 30 points. But I'll look at Casper Ware. You're the point guard. You had 6 points against New Zealand, 2 for 10. 5 points against Brisbane, 2 from 8. So that's those numbers just, they're not good enough. Chris Golding against New Zealand was 2 for 9. And against Brisbane, he was 5 for 12. These are two guys that you're pinning your scoring hopes on, Damo, in your backcourt. And it's as simple as they're not hitting shots and they're not delivering. And there's not much going the other way either.
Well, there's a couple of things you sort of hit on, and it's scoring. Scoring is what Chris Golding is expected to do. That's why he's there. That's why he's made a name for himself, but he hasn't been able to do it.
Yeah, so in his first three games, to provide context, obviously he missed those first... He missed some games with his appendix, but he had 10 points against Perth, which was his first game of the season, 7 against New Zealand and 13 against Brisbane.
Yeah. But you look at the number of shots he's taken, and with the talent on that roster, you're going to take that many shots, you're going to be hitting them. And unfortunately for Melbourne too, some of those shots are just not good shots. They're contested. And as you said, with the amount of talent on that roster, they just haven't been able to gel yet. Now, Casper Ware, you expect more. You expect more from Golding. Have they recruited the right players? Have they got enough role players there to gel the stars together?
I mean, it's been an issue since they moved to the United name. They moved to the United name and the new ownership came in.
Yeah. It's all been about stars.
Seeing a similar thing with the Sydney Kings as well. You know, a very similar thing happening over there. I mean, look, we do have to preface this with, it is early in the season, but at the same time, it's not like it's an 82-game season where you've got time to figure it out. It's a condensed season. It's short, Damo, where you have to win games. You know, you can't fall behind the pack. If you fall behind the pack in this league, it's simply sometimes too hard to catch up.
It's early days.
And it's time to turn it around.
Bring it together.
And look, I expect them to just on the ring. I expect them to turn them around. And I still think they make the playoffs. Because at the end of the day, I just think they're too good not to. But you know what? We probably would have said they're too good to lose three games in a row during the season as well. But
look, to me, a bit of the upset, the apple cart, it's when Goulding came back into the team that things sort of went astray. Now, is that just getting him back in because of everything that happened before them, the start of the season, the NBA game? They played well. They were gelling well together. He comes in, throws out the balance a little bit, perhaps. From a viewer from afar, that's what it looks like. Now, hopefully they can bring it together because, as you said, on paper, they're talented. And if they gel, they're going to be a dangerous team.
Yeah, I mean, look, Dean Vickerman hasn't got it. His rotations are still a bit out of whack, so they're still trying to figure out a few things back in the roster. But, I mean, you just want to see better. They got a home back-to-back this weekend. You know, that's two games. There's something very interesting. I was thinking about this the other day in terms of, just before we finish off, I'll just quickly make this point that, in terms of home court advantage in the NBA, we look at the Perth Wildcats. They're the gold standard. They sell out arenas. The fans go wild. And they're basically impossible to beat in Perth. They very, very rarely get beaten in Perth. So they've established that home court advantage. I look at Melbourne United. And look, they sell out games. They sold out their home opener against New Zealand, which was fantastic. They get great crowds, which do make a lot of noise. I don't know if the team has done well enough to actually establish an intimidating home court presence. When I'm at a Melbourne game, and I'm not sure if opposition teams feel this way, but yes, it's loud and it's sold out, but I don't know if the team gets that extra burst of energy that I see the Wildcats do, because they're beaten very often on their home floor. So I don't know. It's something small. It's a home court advantage, but
it's going to take time, Luke. It takes time to develop that.
Yeah,
it's going to take time to develop the connection with the fans, and it's going to take time to develop that winning culture and the expectation that comes with it. And with that expectation, Perth have built that, as you said, over a long, long time now. And that's where the crowd plays a role. There's nearly that expectation. We'll lift now and we'll lift you and you lift up on the court. And
that
culture just hasn't been built with the fans, the connection with the fans yet. And that'll just take time.
Yeah.
And it will take wins, though, to make that happen.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to cheer a team if you're down by 15 points. I mean, we all say you don't want to be fair of our fans, but if you're losing by 15 points, there's not much to cheer about. Hey, Damo, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks again for joining us on another edition of the Pick and Pop podcast, of course.
Before we leave, hang on.
Oh, yes, some European news. I apologise. It is on my rundown here. I've just quickly overlooked it. It's important news.
Right.
It's back. Yeah, it's
important news.
Yep,
Ben
go
Madden
for it.
Ben has busted his hand. He's broken his hand. He's had successful surgery to insert a pin into his hand, but it's just bad timing. He's going to miss the whole remaining Eurocup first round in the regular season, and he's going to be out for up to 8 weeks.
Yeah, so bad news there on the injury front for Ben Madden. Damo, I'll try again. Thanks for joining us on another big edition of the Pick and Pop podcast. Of course, all your Aussie basketball news in all the leagues, all across the globe, national teams, everything. We've got it covered at the Pick and Roll. .com.au. Social channels at Pick and Roll AU, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're all over it. We're all there. Damo, until next week, thanks again for joining us on another Pick and Pop podcast.
See you next week.